This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is all about mushrooms and the benefits of a wide variety of species of mushrooms. We're going to talk to an expert on the subject. He's Mark Kaler. Mark is a master herbalist. He is a certified nutritionist, also has earned a PhD, and he is a consultant educator for a very good company, Mushroom Wisdom, which has a wide offering of mushroom products. Mark, with a little bit of background on how you got involved with mushrooms and, you know, why it's such a source of fascination for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of actually backed into it. As you mentioned, I was going to grad school. I was at that time getting my PhD in sociology. The plan was to go on and get a university teaching job and things. And a number of things kind of came together to really switch my whole life path in that regard. One was, you know, my first entree into a true natural health food store. I grew up in small town middle America. I'd never seen a health food store, so walking into a health food store was a world awakening to me, and I found out, really, you know, it may sound weird nowadays, but I found out that food can actually impact your health and your healing.
What a concept.
That was, yeah, I know, amazing. The other thing was, is I was a competitive swimmer all my life, mm-hmm. and I remember going to nationals in high school, and I'm walking over to the Swimming Hall of Fame in Fort Lauderdale with my coach, and he actually reaches into his pocket and pulls out a handful of pills, and he says, here, you know, take one of the, whatever it was, blue ones, it'll make you swim faster. And I'm like, no, that's not why I'm doing this. You know, I just didn't want to do that. So that got me started looking at the options that were available then, which back then, again, there weren't a lot of things. There was wheat germ oil, ginseng, some of the worst protein powders you've ever tasted in your life.
So you weren't sick, but you wanted to enhance your performance naturally.
Yeah, it was really about recovery and getting the most out of me, which is what I was doing it for anyways. You know, I wasn't doing it to see what pharmaceutical aids could get me faster, right, and all about winning. I just wanted to see what I was capable of doing. So that kind of got me turned on to the possibility of supplements and things. And then from there, basically, I've had the opportunity to study with a number of traditional healers, lots of different healing modalities. When I was living in Chicago a number of years ago, I worked with one of the first groups that really tried to deal with the HIV/AIDS crisis from a holistic manner. And that's where I started getting into what we would call tonic remedies. And mushrooms, I think, very much fit into that tonic remedy modality. So I started exploring them more and more, using them, seeing them in practice. You know, one thing led to another, career path changes, and, you know, here I am today now, preaching and yelling about how wonderful medicinal mushrooms are.
Well, before we get into medicinal mushrooms, there's a lot of buzz about just conventional mushrooms. Just eating white button mushrooms, according to a recent study, has been associated with decreased risk for certain types of cancer. I think they validated that prostate cancer was impacted by mushroom consumption and perhaps other cancers. Is that true according to your research?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the biggest studies have been some fairly large population studies that were done in Asia, specifically with breast cancer, and they found out that, I think it was women that ate mushrooms, any kind of mushroom, anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week, decreased their risk for breast cancer, something like 64%, which is mind-blowing. I mean, all I have to do is, you know, eat mushrooms a few times a week, and I can lower my risk that dramatically. So there have been a number of studies and a growing amount of research on, you know, the more edible mushrooms, the things that we eat on a regular basis that we don't normally think of as medicinal. The, you know, the button mushroom, which you referred to, is an aromatase inhibitor, which makes it, you know, useful specifically for hormonally related breast cancer. So eating them certainly has lots of value. They're nutritionally rich, they're nutritional dense, Good sources of a number of vitamins and minerals. There are some, just eating them, some benefits as far as blood sugar and insulin resistance and sensitivity and things, which is, we can go into a fair amount of detail later on that one, but there's just a wide range of benefits, immune even, and, just overall health.
And, is it just urban legend? I've heard that you have to cook the mushrooms, that raw mushrooms aren't good for you, that it's even said that they're, quote, poisonous. Is that true?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. It depends on the type of mushrooms. There's lots of different families of mushrooms. But the type of mushrooms that are most, widely consumed are the button family mushrooms. That would be button, cremini, portobellas. Those are the ones, at least here in the West, that we eat the most of. There's a compound in there called agaritine. Agaritine, in studies, when given in isolation in large quantities to rats and things, has shown some proclivity to increase risk for cancer development. That being said, there are important things to remember there. One is it's isolated agaritine, and it's also in extraordinarily high amounts. Mm-hmm. So there's some concerns there. The nice thing about it is mushrooms, when you heat them, when you cook them, it neutralizes that agaritine. So by cooking them, we remove any of that risk. And I'm always one of those, better safe than sorry. Go ahead and cook them. It probably makes them more digestible anyways. Mm-hmm. I think it makes them taste better too. Yeah. So, why not just go ahead and cook them and get the safety and the taste out of it?
Yeah, and I've been taking the extra step of, instead of just making a regular omelet, I've been adding sautéed mushrooms to my veggie omelets in the morning, just to up my overall mushroom consumption. Culinary mushrooms, they're good for you. But then this is actually a science that dates back millennia, the use of medicinal mushrooms in traditional cultures. So give us a mushroom 101. There's so many different varieties. I'm not even sure where to start.
Yeah, they certainly do have a very long history. And to me, that's one of the really intriguing things about it. And one of the interesting things there is that some of these mushrooms have been used, as you mentioned, literally for thousands of years. There are written records in traditional Chinese medicine texts of a handful of mushrooms that they considered superior medicines. And what they meant by superior medicines was they weren't just about disease. They weren't just about prevention of diseases. They're about making you the best you can be. And that's where you get that kind of tonic element to them. So they've been using them in traditional medicine, particularly in Asia, for a very, very long time, which gives us a lot of hands-on, very rich, nuanced understanding of some of these mushrooms. So there is that very, very long history of use. What I find really intriguing today is that in the last, about 75 years, there's been a growing body of researchers looking at them, looking at these traditional uses, saying, how can we study these things in a lab? How can we study them in animals? How can we study them clinically and things? And find out, can we confirm whether these traditional uses are applicable? And generally across the board, they had it right. The applications for reishi and cordyceps, two of these long-used traditional mushrooms, were really right on as far as how they were used traditionally, and modern science has confirmed that. So it's, interesting to have that juxtaposition, that crossover of this traditional use and energy and applications now melding with scientific research, and they're confirming each other, so to speak.
Okay, well, I look at the website for mushroomwisdom.com, and there's a whole host of different mushrooms that are listed there. Maitake, lion's mane, shiitake mushrooms, reishi, cordyceps, Coriolis mushrooms, agaricus mushrooms, and then a couple that I haven't even heard of, tremella, mishima. I have heard of shaga mushrooms, but maybe starting wherever you like, take us on a tour through some of these.
Oh, I hope you have about 20 hours to extend through this.
We may need a four-part program here, but let's do our best with one shot.
Yeah, I'll just give it like a super Reader's Digest. We can go through each of them individually, just a brief take on them, and then if you want to go into more detail, I'll try to do it alphabetically if I can. Sure. Agaricus. This is a mushroom that actually originated out of the rainforest in Brazil. It has an intriguing kind of backstory behind it. It was a mushroom that was consumed, locally there as a food, not used a lot medicinally. And what happened is some anthropologists went into that area and they found some communities there that just had much lower instances of chronic diseases, heart disease, arthritis, things that we associate with getting older and things. And they found out their levels were much lower, and they couldn't figure out why, there was such a difference in these communities. And they found out, they attributed it to the fact that these people ate the agaricus mushroom on a regular basis. So that's kind of how that got all started in that regard. You mentioned the chaga mushroom. The chaga is another long-used traditional medicinal mushroom in a different community, more in Russia, in the Slavic countries, in Eastern in Europe in particular. There they used it primarily as like a strong strengthening tonic. Chaga would be used when hunters would go out for days, you know, on the hunt, mm-hmm. and they didn't have all these, you know, fancy, you know, freeze-dried foods and things to take with them, but they needed to keep the energy up, and they would use chaga in that regard. Chaga more recently has gotten a certain acclaim to fame in the mid-50s, I guess it was. The Russian, whatever the actual name is, the medical society, you know, the research society or whatever there, actually announced it effective against cancers, a number of different mm-hmm. types of cancers, mm-hmm. and that led to a bunch of research.
I imagine they Coriolis, wanted to use it on their athletes, too, because of the, you know, push for Russian dominance in sports.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that strengthener helps with recovery. Cordyceps, and now that's another one that was widely used for athletes. Most of us, you
but
know,
that's
that
an interesting
familiar,
instance because that's not purely a mushroom. That's actually a hybrid of an animal and a fungus, right?
Yeah, I try not to tell people about that because as soon as you say this is a fungus that grows out the head of a caterpillar, immediately you hear, oh, you know, I don't want to eat
yucky.
That.
Yeah, it's like
that
eating an insect, yeah.
Thankfully, though, modern researchers have found a way to basically cultivate it through a fermentation process. Mm-hmm. So the vast majority of cordyceps you find on the planet are fermented cordyceps.
So you're not eating
cordyceps
caterpillars.
With the caterpillar. And there's some benefits to that in the regard that cordyceps, first of all, it's this fungus that does grow out of the head of a caterpillar. It's found at like 8,000 feet up and above in the Himalayan mountains. It's down in the grass, so it's very, very hard to find. You literally have to get on your hands and knees and root through the grass. And on a good day, you maybe find 3, 4, maybe 5 of those things. And they're only, you know, an inch or two long. So
it's like looking
to get
for truffles.
The wild cordyceps, it takes a lot of work and effort.
It's kind of, it's finding, like finding truffles. You know, it's sort of, you have to go hunting them in the forest.
Yeah, the nice thing with truffles, though, you can get your pig trained to do it, and they can go dig and find it for you.
Right.
So the other thing is it's being, you know, the environment's being destroyed and affected in that sense. So it's nice to have cordyceps there in a safer manner. Cordyceps claim the fame, really, I guess, in the West came when the Chinese athletes entered Olympic competitions. What was that, you know, mid or early 80s or so? Mm-hmm. And they were entering competition, and they were breaking records left and right, you know, shattering world records by huge amounts. And their coaches, when asked, you know, what's your, you know, secret weapon, they said cordyceps. Well, mm-hmm. we now know that it was cordyceps plus, you know, some other pharmaceutical aids that they brought to the table. In fact, one of my Chinese medicine teachers was one of the researchers involved in that process, so I got a little insight into that regard. But cordyceps has a long history as a longevity aid that's traditionally thought of as a, you know, remedy for immortality. And I don't think they really mean immortality. They just mean, you know, living a really long life. But it's one of my favorite herbs. Coriolis, one of the best researched natural remedies out there. It's actually the source of a couple of licensed pharmaceuticals used primarily in Asia, either for cancer treatment or for hepatitis. Going through the alphabet here, there's lion's mane, mm-hmm. Which is getting lots of coverage and lots of press of late, particularly for brain and nerve-related disorders. Traditionally, it was used as a chi tonic.
I hear it's used a lot. I hear it's used a lot for preventing chemo brain in patients with cancer who are undergoing chemotherapy.
Yeah, I think we're really at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the lion's mane mushroom. Most of the work is really kind of focused on, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's related, but there's certainly a lot of other nerve related. I tend to, you know, looking at all the research and things, I tend to think basically what it does is improves the overall functioning of our brain. So whatever challenges our brain is going through, I think lion's mane is a wonderful remedy to help keep that brain healthy, functioning, and maybe even help it operate at more optimal levels.
There's a product called amiloban. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Is that a derivative of lion's mane?
Yeah, the amiloban product is a product that's based on clinical research where they concentrated two classes of compounds of the lion's mane mushroom. Mm-hmm. It is many times stronger than the basic lion's mane products that are out there. In fact, it has compounds that aren't found in a lot of the lion's mane products that are out there. Lion's Mane, the way most companies do it, they do one of two things. One is they just grind it into a powder, mm-hmm. and they give it to you in a capsule or tablet. The problem with that is our bodies don't break it down particularly well, so assimilation is pretty poor in that regard. Traditionally, a lot of people would extract it in hot water, and there are certainly some benefits to Lion's Mane extracted in hot water. But what they found is there are these compounds called hericinones, and the compound which Mushroom Wisdom discovered, and they actually named it amylobin, which are not water-soluble. They're fat-soluble, alcohol-soluble compounds. So they're not actually found in a lot of the Lion's Mane products that are out there. And those are the compounds that seem to be strongest for stimulating something called nerve growth factor, mm-hmm. And then having brain protective actions associated with it.
Fascinating. You're doing pretty good. We're up to, let's see,
Maitake.
M for Maitake.
Maitake is, in my opinion, if not the best, one of the best immune boosters that we have available to us. Whether it be mushrooms, whether it not be mushrooms, it'll increase numbers, activity, overall functionality of the immune system. It really just kicks the immune system in the gear. There have been, I think, three comparative studies that have been done with the maitake mushroom showing that it does stimulate the immune system more effectively than a number of other remedies that were tested, including a number of medicinal mushrooms. They found it had the strongest anti-tumor action to it than the other medicinal mushrooms that are commonly used for it. Even at strengths, when the other mushrooms were used at much higher doses, the maitake, and particularly the maitake defraction, was stronger in that regard. Now, I want to add a really important caveat. I am by no means saying this is a cure for cancer, as a tumor remedy. It's one of the most upsetting things to me, and one of the things that disturbs me a lot about, you know, kind of alternative medicine, particularly as it's represented online, people making all these grandiose claims about these things, it gets my buttons pushed. So if you're looking to boost the immune system, there's the maitake mushroom.
Yeah, we're talking about an integrative approach, you know, where we're using, appropriately deployed conventional methods, being conservative about, things that are destructive to the immune system, but with the proper support and, you know, stuff that doesn't interfere with conventional therapies. And I think maitake is an example of a good adjunct, even if you're undertaking, chemo or radiation.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good point. There are studies that have been done with the maitake defraction in particular in conjunction with a number of chemo agents. It's been shown to decrease the negative side effects, the hair loss, the pain, the nausea, the vomiting, decreases in red and white blood cells. All of those things have been shown to improve when you take the maitake defraction in conjunction with chemotherapy. It's also been shown to potentiate certain chemotherapy agents, making them actually work better so they kill more cancer cells. And you get less negative side effects associated with it when used in conjunction to it. So that alone, I think, makes it extraordinarily promising in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
The next is another mushroom that in the West, most of us probably haven't heard of, called poria. The irony there is that in Asia, it is one of the most widely used natural remedies in traditional Chinese medicine. They have these formulas that are called patent medicines, and these are basically formulas that have been set down oftentimes for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and poria is included in a great number of them. And it's for something that, again, we don't really have terms for it in the West because they look at the body a little different. It's for what would be called dampness. Mm-hmm. Dampness is basically too much moisture in the body, and that can manifest in, you know, runny nose, post-nasal drip, mucus and phlegm, phlegm in the lungs. A lot of dampness is related to digestive issues, lethargic, gaseous digestive tract is considered a damp digestive tract. So poria is a wonderful remedy to use in that regard, specifically for that excess dampness. And the reality is Westerners tend to be extraordinarily damp. Mm-hmm. Our lifestyle, our dietary habits all contribute to dampness. The multitasking that many of us spend most of our days doing, that creates a lot of dampness.
Stress, exhaustion,
the types of foods,
excess
that we drink.
Sugars and carbohydrates and artificial ingredients may undermine our vitality.
Absolutely. Dairy products, sodas, those are all really dampening. Cold soy can be very dampening in the body. So I don't know where you stand on the soy thing, but if people are going to eat soy, it needs to be heated or used with some warming aromatic herbs to help in that regard. So wonderful herb in that. Shiitake, probably one of the medicinal mushrooms that most of us are familiar with just because it's a delicious, yummy mushroom. Potent immune benefits to them. There are, again, a couple of of pharmaceuticals that have been derived from it that are used in Asia, particularly for cancer treatments or recovery in cancer treatments. I like to use shiitake as an antiviral. I think it's one of the most important antivirals. And the area that I use it probably most often is for systemic candida infections. It's a potent antifungal. It works very holistically. It actually kills the fungus.
It's a fungus that is antifungal.
Yeah, and you know, think about it. You know, where do mushrooms grow? You know, most of them grow in dark, damp environments. And guess what they're competing with? Other funguses, other things that grow in that dark, damp environment. So they have to develop kind of their own immune resistance to the same things just as we do. And those compounds, as they translate into the body, also are antifungal in that sense.
That should be reassuring to people who have candida, because they might be concerned about consuming a fungal agent like a mushroom, that it, you know, maybe some cross reactivity. You say shiitake is compatible with the treatment of yeast problems.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the myths that has been tossed around for quite a long time, is that if you have a systemic yeast infection, you can't have mushrooms. Eating mushrooms may be a little problematic, probably less because of the mushrooms themselves, but because of what might be on the mushrooms. Again, they grow in dark, damp environments. What's going to be on them? Bacteria, molds, yeast, and other things. And a lot of people with systemic yeast infections, as you know, are quite reactive to those compounds and things. So eating them, I think, can be problematic. Now, a properly prepared extract, many mushrooms have been shown to have antifungal and specifically anti-candida actions to them. And shiitake works in that regard, I think, quite holistically with the body, with the liver, with the body as a whole and things. Next would be, I think the last one is tremella mushroom. Tremella mushroom in Chinese medicine is considered a yin tonic. It's kind of the opposite of poria. As I mentioned, poria is good when there's too much dampness in the body. Tremella is good when there's too much dryness in the body. Dry hacking cough, dry eyes. In fact, my wife is a contact wearer, and she was always constantly putting drops in her eyes when I first met her. I put her on Tremella, and you know, it's now been 18 or 20 years she's been using Tremella. I don't think I've seen her put eye drops in her eyes since then. So anytime you need to bring moisture to the body, I think Tremella is a wonderful remedy in that regard. People living in dry climates, people living in the deserts, obviously need to bring more moisture to the body. Tremella is excellent for that regard. In practice, I use it a lot for people who are undergoing radiation treatments. And I'm simplifying here a little bit, but radiation in many senses is fundamentally, it's a burning, so to speak. And Tremella helps with that healing. It helps bring moisture to those areas. Tremella has been shown to have some benefits, you know, undoing some of the negative consequences of radiation, particularly like increasing red blood cell production and a number of other factors. So Tremella is really all about kind of bringing moisture to the body. So if you tend to be really phlegmy and things, runny nose and stuff, poria is the one for you. If you tend to be really dry, then Tremella in that regard is the mushroom to use.
Interesting. I think you missed one in your excellent that one. But also reishi. Did we talk about reishi? Because we jump right to the teas, and reishi is an important one.
It's actually quite ironic that I should miss reishi, because reishi is my favorite, not only medicinal mushroom, reishi is my favorite supplement. In fact, I'd go so far to say that if everybody on the planet would use a reishi mushroom extract, that the world would be a better place. That's how valuable I think the reishi mushroom is in that regard.
Sort of your Swiss Army knife of mushrooms.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've coined the phrase tonic for the 21st century, because I think it is the remedy that is, in a sense, perfectly suited for the things that we're confronted in today's society. Number one killer in America, heart disease. Reishi has a number of benefits in that regard. Number two killer in America, reishi. Reishi has benefits certainly preventatively and as an adjunct treatment with other things. We know stress is a major player, an issue in our health and vitality and in our recovery and things. Reishi is considered a Shen tonic in Chinese medicine, and that's all about kind of the emotional, spiritual center of the body. Reishi is a wonderful tonic for really kind of balancing that stress and anxiety that can come with modern society and the fast-paced life that we live. Reishi is a tonic for the heart, lungs, liver, kidneys, adrenals, central nervous system, brain. It can improve sleep. It's an antioxidant. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's what I call a tonic cleanser, helping the body detoxify on a regular basis. So to me, reishi is such a wonderful remedy that, you know, I have yet to meet anybody that I think would not benefit from some of the things that reishi has to offer. And again, thousands of years of use in traditional medicine, and again, one of the best research natural remedies out there on the PubMed, which is the research center that the National Institutes of Health has, hundreds if not thousands of citations on the reishi mushroom. So can't say enough about the reishi mushroom. The next is Mishima. As you mentioned, that's one most are not familiar in the West. Mishima is one of the most potent mushrooms for boosting the body's immune response. But Mishima, I think, is best suited really when it comes to an adjunct treatment in breast cancers. Again, not a cure, something that I think it makes a useful element and a holistic approach to it. Intriguingly, what is amazing about it is most people may not know there's different types of breast cancers. There's hormone-related, not hormone-related, estrogen, progesterone. It may depend on the type of cancer cells that are there. Mishima seems to work across the board on all of them, and that's very unusual to find a remedy that's effective, you know, for both estrogen receptor positive and estrogen receptor negative in that regard and things. And I always say if I were trying to design the perfect, you know, anti-breast cancer remedy, and I wanted to list the 10 things that I think a remedy like that should do, Mishima probably does 8 of those things. So it's preventative, it's therapeutic, it's a good adjunct, may prevent growth, may prevent spread, may prevent the cancer from, you know, feeding itself, just a number of very specific benefits to it. So this is a really intriguing mushroom that, you know, comes at a time that, you know, we really need this mushroom.
Well, you've done a marvelous job providing us with a thumbnail sketch on all the different mushroom varieties. What I'd like to do in part two, we divide our podcasts into two parts, as our listeners know. I'd like to approach it from a problem-oriented standpoint, looking at some of the major issues that confront people, fatigue, immunity, cardiometabolic issues, brain protection, and, of course, cancer, in part two. So stay with us, Mark Kaler. Mark Kaler is a master herbalist, certified nutritionist, and a PhD, and one of the world's authorities on mushroom science. And that's, by the way, the name of a company. I'm sorry, Mushroom Wisdom, which we'll tell you a little bit about in part two, because for Intelligent Medicine listeners, we're going to share a special offer. So stay tuned. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.